Welcome to the Love Triangle, sponsored by Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. I love my cooker. I use it daily, multiple times, making tea, cooking vegetables, pasta, rice. I absolutely love it. For more information, go to cooker.co.uk. If you can afford one, I promise you, you'll love that gadget in your house. Mine also, by the way, does chilled filtered water and chilled sparkling filtered water as well. It's very cool. I'm living in the future. They also sponsor my new project, which is a platform called lovejoy.co.uk. It's a collection of articles and films and things and stuff, stuff that I've learned from doing this podcast. I'm also putting up new content on there all the time too. It's not self-help, by the way. I'm one of those celebrities who's telling you how to live your life, which seems to be very en vogue at the moment. And, you know, a lot of them are making very good points and they mean well. But it's not me doing that. It's me questioning life, which, as you know, if you're a regular listener to this, I do regularly because, you know, I have my issues. Hopefully, though, what I'm going to try and do is build a community of people who are questioning life. I have many more questions than answers, as always. I'd love to know what you think. Please go and have a look. It's lovejoy.co.uk. That's where I'm putting all the content up. It's like in beta. I think that's what they call it, beta phase at the moment. We're just trying. We've got a few little, what do you call those things? I can't think what the correct word is. LJ, do you know what the correct term is for the...
Bugs,
that's the word. That's the word. I've got a few little bugs and we're just trying to sort out the bugs at the moment. So, but go there and let me know what you think. And probably the best way to get in contact with me is lovejoyhour@gmail.com. This is the email address here. Let me know what you think anyway. Today's hour, I'm curious about how our senses experience the world. Strange topic this, but joining me for a conversation, as you just heard of there, is LJ Rich, who is best known for presenting BBC Tech Show Click. LJ Rich is also a journalist, producer, inventor, creator, and composer. But she also has, here we go, I'm going to try and pronounce this, synesthesia. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Synesthesia, that was very good attempt.
Right, okay.
Just the extra S in the middle.
Synesthesia. Synesthesia is a
new... Yes.
Say it for me again.
Synesthesia.
Oh, synesthesia is a neurological trait or condition that results in joining or merging of senses that aren't normally connected. The stimulation of one sense causes an involuntary reaction to one or more of the other senses. For example, someone with synesthesia, I'm now all over the place there, may hear colour or see sound. LJ, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
I'm really good, thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolute pleasure. First of all, tell us a bit about this condition, then we'll go into your career and how it's helped or hindered you. So how did you find out about it and how does it manifest itself?
Well, like many people with synesthesia, I actually found out that other people did not have this condition. And what happens is a stray conversation reveals that the way that one experiences the world is completely unique. That's probably true of everybody, actually, but it's very strange. I mentioned to somebody that a particular kind of honey was in a B flat major sixth, and it tasted really nice because most honey is just in a simple B flat major. And they said, you might have this thing called synesthesia. And when they told me what it was, where your senses get mixed together and eating something fires off something else or listening to music fires off colours, then it was almost like this sigh of relief. My whole body relaxed. My goodness, this thing that I've been having trouble handling the world with, because obviously a lot of it can be quite overwhelming, it's got a name. It's something that many people have. And it started to make sense. And the more and more I looked into synesthesia, the more I realized that I experience it very intensely. And perhaps everybody is somewhere on the sliding scale of experiencing one thing whilst being stimulated by another. For example, we say we've got the blues when we're sad. A color blue is associated with sadness. So maybe there's more to it than just me and my crazy brain.
That's actually amazing. Do you know, obviously you've looked into it, did you fall in a vat of radiation? Were you bitten by a spider? Do you know how you've got it, why you've got it?
There is some evidence that this is a hereditary trait. I also have perfect pitch, which means that I can hear something and identify exactly what's going on. And that is a hereditary trait. I took part in a genetics study for the University of California, Southern California, I think it was, many years ago. I sent my saliva across the Atlantic to be part of this study because there was a selection of online tests that you could do, and I aced all of them. And they said, "Ah, you are in one of the top people in the world with this acuity. We want to hear a bit more about you." And yes, it does seem that there is a hereditary trait, although it's very interesting because I do believe that everybody has it.
Right. How does it manifest itself? We'll get onto that in a minute. But how does it manifest itself the other way around? You're saying about food, it replicates itself in your mind as far as I can say. With it, music, you, as you're tasting your food, is it you see your food or you taste your food? Which way does it work?
It is a bit of a mess up there, so I'll try and explain it. When I listen to music, I see in my mind's eye a massive IMAX screen, and on it is a kind of projection of colours and lines and light, which is basically all of the notes in a piece of music split out so that I can read it, so I can manipulate moving it forwards and backwards, querying particular notes to find out, the violin is playing a G, for example. And so I see this kind of movie playing across my mind in colours and sort of blotches and patterns and shapes, and that helps me decode music. And that's always happened since I was tiny. And with food, when I eat food, I hear music, which is amazing. It's why I'm a complete and total foodie. I love eating and experiencing new combinations of flavours. And the other way around as well. So David Bowie's Life on Mars, I've got my keyboard plugged in because I thought I might need it for examples. That's this sort of gorgeous textures of orange and purple. You know, ABBA songs like this. That's like a kind of blue and yellow, which is pleasingly just like the Swedish flag. And listening to formulaic pop music is like eating icing sugar. It's nice. It's not massively substantial, but it's kind of, it does the trick. And things like sushi, that tastes like... I actually need to change sound for this. Hang on. Here we go. It's a sort of acoustic guitar, sort of power chords like that, DNA. That's like a beautiful piece of sushi.
How do things like, what about something like spaghetti, which is sort of a spaghetti bolognese type thing, which is all long and gangly, and how does that manifest itself in sound in your mind?
Weirdly, spaghetti bolognese is like Supertramp.
Dreamer! Oh, that one.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I don't quite know why the logical song and spaghetti bolognese go, but I found that I can play with this sort of mapping and augment my experience of food with music. Like if you eat mashed potato and listen to the Eagles, it's fabulous. And drinking green tea whilst listening to Bach is very rewarding. You get the idea.
So you think we've all got some form of this, do we? Where we're connecting our senses. Is that what you believe?
I do think so. If you look at how we interact with each other as humans, we use language in such a creative way. People say that they're feeling under the weather. There are all these beautiful phrases that are very visual in their way. We don't just communicate in a sort of dispassionate, neutral fashion. We use our words to accentuate our emotions. We're using different ways to transmit our emotions. And I do feel that through the way that we express ourselves by the food that we choose to eat, by the music we choose to listen to, there is this kind of cross-modality happening where we might think something a little bit more than just words.
Yeah, the only problem with words, though, and I do have a major problem with words, and I think regular listeners will know this, is I much prefer tone than words, because words are so misused all the time. You know, he's a legend. I I'd always do this one because it's a great example. One minute it's like you're doing I love you, and the next minute I love slippers. You know, it's like that same word is used for such a nonsense word now, and you know we're still putting it out there. Recently it's been Valentine's Day and that word's everywhere, and it's kind of, I don't know, with the tone of it, I think means so much more. And as we know now, we've gone on to social media and we're doing a lot more reading than we've ever done, I imagine, because we're constantly reading all day long. Those words we're doing, and we're trying to make them short, and they're all being misread because there's, you know, I remember I gave up, I really genuinely gave up doing Twitter when I realized no one can read sarcasm. And most of the things I was writing were sort of humorous or supposedly humorous. And everyone was taking them seriously. I was like, this is bollocks. I'm not doing this anymore. Because everything I write, people go, I can't believe you're saying that. It's like, it's so stupid what I've written. Can't you understand? But there's no tone in the words. So, you know, I'm much, much bigger on tone than I am the actual words.
Well, tonality is such a giveaway for how we're actually feeling. And I think with social media, a lot of that is stripped away. It's the same problem when you write something in an email. It's very easy to be misconstrued. And without those kind of qualifiers of what we're actually sounding like when we speak to somebody, you lose a degree of richness in communication.
Okay.
So let's, I completely get you.
Let's just stay on music for a minute, because I've said this a few times on Sunday Brunch and on my radio shows and things. That music to me is, it's like such a foreign language. I think I'd stand more chance of learning German than I would to play an instrument. I have a massive interest in music and the way it makes me feel. Though the actual ability to play it and read it, it just doesn't work for me at all. It's such a very strange thing in it. Other people find it so natural to do. I wonder whether it's manifested itself in making it so simple for you to play instruments. Is that how it's manifested itself?
For me, music is easier than English, than speaking. It's incredibly innate. I was one of those child prodigies that could play things from the radio when I was very, very small. And I also believe that people are more musical than they think. There are rules in music. So you actually know a lot of them. Let me show you. Let me do this. Right. Did you feel the urge to say any particular word or sing any particular thing just then?
Yeah.
Okay, what about this?
Living on a prayer.
These are like calls and responses. They're learned from repetition, but I think it's a physical thing. I think that people, whether or not you see yourself as musical, you can recognize well-known songs, sonic logos, you know, and even listening to music like this. Know what emotion you're meant to be filming from a film soundtrack. There are tons of rules like this, and we use these rules in certain ways to make music. And I think in the same way that somebody who has studied art could point at a painting and tell you exactly what the composition is, somebody who hasn't studied art could still think, I like this painting, I love these slippers.
Yeah, it's having the ability to do it, which is the point I was making, is I have the ability to listen. I actually went on about, I used to tour with bands selling t-shirts, and I went on tour with a band called Prong, who are a thrash metal band. And the first couple of gigs, I was like, oh my God, this just is unbelievable. So I can't get my head around it at all. I'm just not really into sort of metal type music. Just doesn't do anything for me. But by the end of the tour, I knew all the songs, I was singing along. That repetition thing really works, doesn't it? It really does make a difference. But I can't then take that music and actually understand how it, when people say tune your guitar to a different key or whatever, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I just this doesn't make any sense in my mind at all. I know, obviously I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, but if someone says kick a football or go for a swim or swing a golf club, I get it, I get that principle. But music, for some reason, it just doesn't click with me. I kind of decided to give up on it a while ago because I thought, you know, I'm never gonna be lead singer of a band, so I'll listen to other people doing it rather than attempt to do it myself. But you know, so I wonder if there is sort of some magic in the ability to actually see, or like you're saying, you see all the notes. I've got a bit of a fog when it comes to that.
I think there's definitely some innate nature in being able to provide music or to provide that kind of entertainment. But I do believe it's possible to learn, like repetition. How many times did you kick a football before you started to be able to consciously want to point the ball in a particular direction? And I think repetition, you touched on it just then, is such an interesting part of learning, because we do it all the time for everything.
Yeah.
You know, our brain uses pattern recognition. Sounds good, like last time. Tastes bad, like last time. Oh, this animal looks friendly, like last time. And understanding repetition means we can mess about with it. And there's a professor of psychology called Diana Deutsch who discovered the audio equivalent of optical illusions. You know, that what color is that dress, or which arrow is the longest?
She's
done it with sound, right? So she did this thing called the speech to song illusion, discovered in 1995. So if you listen to something enough times, it starts to become musical. And she had a phrase, sometimes behave so strangely, sometimes behave so strangely, sometimes behave so strangely. And then the more you would hear it, you start to hear the music coming out. And that's something that we and you experienced with your brush with thrash metal, that the repetition of that became something that your neural pathways were conditioned to start enjoying.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've enjoyed it. No, I did. I actually liked them. They were good guys. By the way, that you can hear my cat. We're doing this quite late for me, really. We're doing this I normally do them during the day at 6 o'clock at night, and it's the time of the day where the cat wants attention. So excuse the princess in the background meowing away there.
Cat is welcome.
She
can bring the cat in.
She's a very noisy. She's very vocal. She's a very vocal cat, interestingly. With music, I did this thing on my podcast once where I was discussing with Sean Keaveney, the Six Music DJ. Well, he's left there now, but about how there was a period of time where I couldn't listen to him. I was having in a bout of depression, and music was so painful to me that I couldn't listen to it. I didn't want to take the music on board. It's very powerful music, and I put it out there on the podcast, and I said, I think I feel a bit stupid saying this, but the amount of response I got was phenomenal, with people going, I've just listened to your podcast and that's how I feel. Music hurts. It's hard to, when you're not in depression, it's hard to describe how painful it is from when you were in it. And everyone experiences it differently, I'm sure. But it's kind of like, it's not a physical pain, but it is as painful as a physical pain. It hurts to be alive, kind of thing, you know. And every day is a struggle to get through it. Just, it's dark clouds and all that sort of stuff. And the idea of music going on, it makes everything worse. It makes it more painful. And it's I'm laughing about it because it's such a strange thing to talk about now, because I'm not in depression. It's very, very strange, because I love listening to music. But there are certain tracks still which can like sweep me straight back to that sort of, not state of depression, but sweep me back to a place where I'm like, oh, I'm uncomfortable with this music now. And then there's other tunes which can make me feel really comfortable. So it's a really interesting thing. So you're seeing that maybe as colours, are you?
Oh, definitely. And I had some pretty rubbish postnatal depression, which was my first experience of that feeling. And I did not want to listen to music during some of the dark times in my life. And as a musician, I had to step away from these things, because what would happen is this emotion is such an intense thing, just for, especially as somebody who has synesthesia, it was incredibly overwhelming. And I actually ended up playing the piano and crying at the same time, just letting it all go through me. And I think that fear of being lost to the feeling is a very real one. And I think it's not to be underestimated, those feelings. And I think it's so easy to go to a doctor if you break your arm. You get your arm fixed, and I'm hopeful that it will start to be just as easy if your brain isn't working to go and speak to someone and get your brain fixed in the same way, you know?
Yeah, people don't really talk about that.
That's nothing to do with the question you asked about music, is it?
No, well, it is, because I like the way this conversation's going, because I do think this is an interesting area where none of us ever discuss, because we don't know what each other feels like, do we? We can't. Mm. It's one of those areas where I go, my arm hurts. You can go into the doctor, and the doctor can go, you know, let's MRI it, let's do whatever sort of scan on an x-ray or something like that. With your feelings, it's we don't know. I've got a real problem with smells, as everybody know. I don't mean I smell. I mean I've got a problem where perfumes and air fresheners, scented candles, some washing powders, definitely any of those car air fresheners, you know, the ones in, you know, when you get in someone's car and they've got
the
like
magic tree.
Oh, those trees and stuff. They immediately send me slightly, they made me nausea. It brings on nausea, and it makes me feel like my head's all foggy, and I get sort of a headache, and it can create a migraine in me and things like that. It makes me feel very sick, and it makes me feel exhausted, those smells. And again, I've discussed this on Sunday Brunch, and everyone laughs at me because it is laughable. You know, if you say you've got a food allergy, everyone goes, okay, we'll deal with that. If I say I've got a smell allergy, people just, it's just, I'm one of the few people in the Master Institute who went, yay, means I don't have to smell perfume all the time. I'm going to carry on wearing it all the way through. Because I genuinely used to go.
No judgment from me.
Sorry?
I completely get you. I remember an hour-long taxi journey in America a while ago, and the driver had about 6 or 7 magic trees hanging from the dashboard. Clearly had gone completely nose blind, and I was in the back with the window open, freezing cold, just wondering whether or not I was going to be too ill to continue the journey. So although I don't have the smell intensity problem to the same degree as you, I can empathize.
But what's funny about it, LJ, is not funny, but when my brother was, when he had cancer, my brother died of cancer, and when he had bad bits after the chemotherapies and things, he would say, please don't anyone wear any perfumes or aftershaves around me, because your senses get really, they become strong. And when women get pregnant, and you know this, you've been pregnant, you don't like strong smells around you, apparently. And when you'd go to breastfeeding classes, which I've been to as a supporting partner, is they tell you never to wear.
I like how you had to qualify that.
Yeah, never to wear perfume around a brand new baby, because they use their smell. We are mammals; we're still supposed to smell stuff. Babies use their smell to go to the nipple to get the milk, and they smell their way to it. And if you've got strong perfumes on, then the baby it confuses the baby. So they always say, make sure there's no smells around a new baby. And they say, do this for the first 2 or 3 weeks. Well, in my class, they said that. So it's interesting that when you're doing things like pregnancy, or you're ill with, you're ill, or you've got all these things, that your senses become sort of more aware and more awake and more intense.
I think we also, as part of the human experience, when we are given the opportunity to focus on our senses, it's surprising just how much acuity we actually have. And yes, when I was pregnant, oh my goodness, I actually chronicled my food cravings. Every month it was a different thing. So like an entire jar of olives and one, and then tofu, just a lot of tofu. And then there was this ghastly green aloe vera drink with lumps in it that I don't like normally. And I was getting them in wholesale packs of 12 and just chugging them down alongside whatever heartburn tablets that I could find at the same time. It was just comedic, the amount of madness that is surrounded when you're sort of going through these sort of physiological changes. But yeah, I do think there is something in how we experience the world, and how I think the world is unnecessarily visual, where there's so many other areas that we can feel our way around. So there's a lot of work being done on something called the tactile internet, where you can feel things happening through the internet. So a few years ago, I was in Japan filming, and one of the research labs I went to had a device which you put your hand in, and on the other side of a video call was a cat. and the cat could play with a toy mouse on the other side of the video call. And whenever it connected its paw with the toy mouse at a distance, you would feel a virtual scratch on your hand on the other side of the call. So it was like having a cat scratch you virtually over the internet. There's a lot of people sort of working on trying to encourage feeling things more and smelling things more even. There's a smell module that you can get to try and get the Internet of Things to a point where you can be in virtual reality and you can smell smells as programmed whilst you're inside VR, or combinations of smells. You buy these little smell canisters. This sounds like your worst nightmare, by the way.
Oh, that's terrible.
So whilst you're playing, you could smell different things to add to the immersive nature of experience. So I do think things are catching up. The internet is your, you know, it's words and sometimes pictures. And there's a lot around accessibility that is slowly, I hope, catching up.
Yeah.
So the rise of audio, for example.
Yeah. By the way, with my smell, my being my superpower, is there's this thing that's happened in restaurants recently, which is the introduction of truffle oil on everything, truffle oil chips and stuff. And I actually like truffle, but I can't stand truffle oil. And so every time I'm in a restaurant, that stuff comes anywhere near me, I'm like, why is that smell? So I looked it up, and truffle oil is not made from truffles. It's a chemical. And you're just basically putting chemicals on your chips, which smell a bit like truffle, but it's a human version of truffle. And truffle, I like the taste. I just can't stand this synthetic rubbish that we're all putting on this thing. And I think that's my biggest problem is I just smell lots of chemicals all the time. Everyone else smells flowers and truffles and beautiful things like that. And I just go, no, I can just smoke. Why are you eating chips with chemicals on it? You know, chemical oil on it. It's like, that's what it looks like to me. I'm going back to sound though. What's really interesting, you talk about the internet and you're playing your keyboard there and it's lovely. But the one thing that I noticed, which is the wonderful thing about the pandemic, is a few things, is when you sort of go out into nature after you've been sort of, there's no cars around and no airplanes and stuff, and you suddenly hear the birds tweeting a lot. And apparently the reason was because the birds could actually tweet further. They could sing further because the sound, there wasn't as much sound getting in the way. So they were getting louder. They were basically shouting. And I was like, you know, I was talking to a bird expert. I'm saying, these bloody birds shouting outside my window every morning. They're like literally shouting now. And he's like, it's because they can go further. But when you actually hear sound in real life, and going back to a concert or a gig and you're somewhere and you actually hear someone play a live instrument. And I had this experience with this woman who, I was in this bar and she came to meet a friend of mine, and she'd just been in the West End and she plays the flute. And after a lot of me drunkenly go, God, play a bit. She got it out and played, I don't know, a minute. The whole bar just went, oh my God, because the sound, real sound, travel. It must be like a much richer experience to actually hear the instrument live, the sound. Do you think that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is why live music is still successful, and why, despite listening to a song on repeat on your audio platform of choice, you are still drawn to that magic, that dopamine rush that you get when you are in an audience listening to strings being scraped against wood, or that feeling of breath going through metal. It's a sensory banquet. And I do feel very much that sense of being enveloped by sound is a very special and unique thing. And I vaguely remember reading in New Scientist some time ago, but I've not been able to find the study, so I may have even imagined it, that I think they played Pink Floyd to guinea pigs. And at key moments where you kind of get the tingle as a human, these guinea pigs registered a drop in body temperature. I'm still trying to find this study because I could have actually imagined it, but there is, nevertheless, empirically, I feel there is this sense, that tingle, that frisson, that feeling when you hear those notes move into another chord, or when you hear someone singing with that rawness, that emotion. They're moving these air molecules in into your mind, quite literally, in fact. It's a beautiful and deeply intensive experience. So, and that's why film soundtracks work, you know?
Yeah, and speaking of which, classical music is the key to parenting. If ever your children, I learned this ages ago, if ever your children are like, they're getting angry, moody, aggressive, shouty, stick some classical music on and their minds go off. And I just think it creates pictures for them in their heads. I'm not sure, but I feel that's what it does, because they're so, you can just see them sort of like start wandering, they daydream. And I think, you know, whereas sort of, yeah, exactly.
It does. It kind of puts you into state.
I was just
almost like. Sorry,
I was just saying. I was just telling you. I was the first. Before we started recording this, I was the first DJ on BBC to be put on a red button. I was doing 606, and they just went, "We're going to try this red button thing where we put a camera on so we can see what people are actually doing." And I remember it arriving and doing it, and they went, "Because you're on TV, you can do it." And for the first time ever, I had to sort of slightly dress up for a radio show, which is what I didn't want to do. And then I noticed that, you know, a few people are watching it because it's new and they could hit the red button on their TVs and stuff and watch 606 and stuff. So, yeah, a few hundred people did it or something. Then you start getting feedback. And then the problems arise is because you used to do signs to the producer about, you know, trying to cut a caller off or something. And you couldn't do that because, you know, you were getting tired of the call and or wind them up. You know, you should do a circle sign. Mm. And the one thing that I realized about it more than anything else is that with radio, you paint pictures. Music, you're painting pictures. That's what you're doing. You're creating pictures in people's minds. You're playing, you're getting the mind's theater to work. As soon as you can see it, you're getting rid of that. And that this podcast at one stage I used to film, and then my friend Mark, who producer on this, and we started talking about it. And one day we said exactly the same thing. We want people to use their imaginations. Can you imagine what they're thinking at the moment? They're like, they're tuning into this and they're hearing you speak. And then every now and then there's music coming from your end. I mean, I don't really want to describe it, but you're dressed up and it looks amazing. What I'm looking at here, it's very visual. There's a little computer laptop there. There's lots of lights flashing. It's wonderful. But I like the idea that they're just being, you know, it's a submersive experience for them with the music. You're talking about music and colors, and they're actually hearing it, and hopefully they're feeling and picturing the colors, and that's the way to do it.
I love that. Music is a transmitter of emotion in the same way that I guess you're using visuals to tell stories. I think when you listen to a great musician and they play, and the world almost takes a breath whilst you're connected to that musician. The strange thing is there's not words, there's not a kind of, you're not entirely sure what the person is saying, but they are expressing something deeper than just notes. And I think there's something in that. I do believe that we as humans almost see music as this toy, this plaything, when actually it's something much, much deeper. So I'm not surprised to learn that there's a lot of mindfulness apps that have background music in there, or just what you were saying before about playing classical music to children to calm them down. And classical music is used in some busy stations to try and calm down the area to stop people kind of loitering. But I think there is a lot in music that we just kind of play with.
Yeah, I wonder if we should be doing it more. When I did a psilocybin trial at the Imperial College, psilocybin's magic mushrooms, wow. And they ran a trial and they asked for volunteers. And I found out about it just weirdly. And I said, I want to put myself on it. And they were like, really? And I was like, yeah, I just want to fancy doing it. I don't do drugs. And I thought it'd be quite interesting. I'd heard a lot about magic mushrooms and psilocybin. And I went on. And what they do is they put headphones on you and then they put a mask on your face so you can't hear anything. They give you the dose. I had two doses on different types. They were MRIing my brain and stuff, so I was a guinea pig. But, you know, I thought I'd give it a go because it's sort of an unusual thing for me to do. And I quite like doing sort of strange experiments. You're only here once, so you might as well experiment with it. And the stuff I've heard about psychedelics is a bit way out there. You might as well do it in a hospital. At least I'm safe. You know,
and, in a controlled environment.
I had great guides as well. And I promised that I'll do a podcast on it sometime, but they're still sorting out the findings of it and everything. But the one thing I can tell you is that two things. One thing is they've had a playlist, which they'd play to you because it's sort of been programmed, lots of wise people had put it together. It's sort of long, generally instrumental tracks, not classical. Well, there was some classical, but they sort of to take you up and down to try and get you to go on an amazing journey, which I did. And the other thing, I don't want to give too much away because I want to do it properly with the thing, but a lot of signals went off in my mind constantly, you know, a lot of connections. So a lot of, I don't want to use the wrong words, but they showed that on the MRI that there was a lot more connections post having done the experience. So sort of meant that everything was connecting and they believed the music would help it. So, you know, if you're going to take magic mushrooms in a field, listening to sort of some band or something, it's not going to be the same experience as listening to what you were playing there and taking you on a little bit of a journey. So, you know, they were very aware of that and what music can do for you and the power in that. So, yeah, obviously music is has an important part to play in who we are as humans these days. Is there is it a blessing or a curse having your I'm going to call it a condition. I'm not sure it is a condition, but I'm going to call it that.
I think a condition is probably a neurological condition is probably accurate. I mean, it is part of me. It's a bit like asking you how it feels to hear the word dog and repeat the word dog. It's such an innate part of existing. What I can say is, having spoken to friends who have taken psychedelics, and when I explain to them some of the experiences I have, like, for example, if I'm in a place that's impossibly beautiful, I have a string orchestra playing in my mind, and it is incredible, the beauty within that landscape. And sometimes going on train journeys, I can hear the music from the rails, and it's not just the prosaic same key that the rails are in. Sometimes you can hear these beautiful kind of segments of orchestral music coming in and out whilst I'm sort of just sitting enjoying the journey. And I think that those connections have a key part in my drive for creativity. I'm always trying to solve problems or find new ways to look at things, and it's already there. It almost feels like when I'm composing, I'm trying to get the music down as quickly as possible before it disappears from my mind. Years ago, I fainted. I used to have a fear of needles, and I fainted. And as I regained consciousness, the most beautiful music I'd ever heard in my life was receding from my grasp. And as I became more and more awake, I remember stretching out and trying to grab this beautiful snatch of music and missing, and I lost it. And then a few years later, I actually fainted again and managed to bring the music back with me. And it's been there ever since. And it's a very strong source for me of personal resilience that no matter what happens, I have this musical core that won't leave me again.
What have you done with the music? Can I just say, by the way, just I interrupt you there. I'm not telling people to do magic mushrooms, by the way. It's a really bad idea to do magic mushrooms unless you're in a situation like I was in, which was I was being studied. I had medical people around me. I had it all. There's so much to know about doing it that unless you're in the hands of experts, it annoys the hell out of me that it's not legal so that people can't do it properly under proper conditions. But I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't. I had a really bad, I had a really traumatic experience. It was beautiful, by the way. I loved every minute of it, but it was very traumatic. But I was in the hands of very good people, so it wasn't beautiful like you described. It with a lot of wonderful colors and stuff, but the experience was amazing. But it wasn't a beautiful experience. I don't want to go into it and to take me forever to explain, but I, please don't just go and do magic mushrooms and think that you're going to have the wildest, best time ever. You need set and setting is what they say. You need to be in the right place with the right people and know what they're doing. And so it's just too much of a risk. Don't do it.
Yes, I'm quite fearful of trying it. And my friends tell me that I don't need to because my brain is very strange already.
Yeah, I think you're probably experiencing. So what happens to the music that you experience?
I can play you a little bit of it if you like, actually.
Go on.
I've never really played it.
Only if you want to.
I'm okay doing it.
Okay.
I feel comfortable doing it. That sort of thing, but it goes on.
That's amazing.
And then there's strings, and then there's...
That is absolutely amazing. Do you think sort of the great composers of our time, do you think they probably had what you have?
I would be really surprised to hear that they didn't. So Beethoven, for example, had terrible digestion. He had really bad tummy problems, and he transcribed his stomach noises into one of his symphonies that we listen to. One of the great symphonies has been inspired by Beethoven's belly. So I believe that the great composers, at least the ones that have stood the test of remembrance, because I also feel that there are many, many, many more great composers who have been lost because their works weren't recorded. We've got this very conventional Western, central sort of European memory of music, which doesn't, like conventional musical education, doesn't take into account the fantastic sounds coming out of the Indian subcontinent, various parts of Africa and all of the different countries and their own musical stylings. So I believe that regardless of the origin of a composer, that they are translating one thing into another, which is effectively what synesthesia is.
Yeah.
You're hearing something and seeing colours. You're eating food and you can hear sound. Beethoven has a tummy ache and makes the most beautiful piece of art out of it. So I believe that creativity and composition is merely translating from one modality into another.
It's funny, actually, my daughter said to me the other day, why does our cat smell everything? And I said, because they use their sense of smell. But she can't quite get her head around that, because we are, as humans, like all the other mammals in existence, you smell a lot. I'm actually not sure the ones in the water do they? Maybe they do. Actually, can't they smell blood in a mile away or something? Oh, is that sharks? They're not. They're fish. Anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not David Attenborough, am I? Where am I going with this? But I explained to her that's the sense we've sort of switched off, haven't we? As we've got it, but we've sort of switched it off. It's not as important to us. Apparently, the pheromones and stuff are important, but we're not as conscious of them. Whereas sight has become huge, hasn't it, for us? And so, and our hearing has, even though we can't see as well as a cat either, as I understand it. I wonder what's happening with our senses. Are we dulling them off? Is what you've got sort of more natural? And I'm getting really, spiritual here. I'm gonna start talking about the universe in the moment, asking the universe permission. But you know, it's like I wonder if we're moving away from our senses, and someone like you comes along and you're really engaged with your senses. So right, someone said to me the other day, when you think about things, are you thinking about them in pictures or words? And I was like, pictures, obviously. And then they went, oh really? Well, I do it in words. I was like, what? I couldn't comprehend that. So I've been thinking about it a lot, and I know I sort of speak to myself, but I sort of speak to myself in pictures, not words. And then no one really knows what each other's experiencing. But I wonder if we're dulling all our experiences. You say, as you said to me a minute ago, you say the word dog. What does that mean? Have we just got to it where that sound just means nothing to us anymore? You know, we're not experiencing it like we should be experiencing it.
I mean, I am like your cat. I smell everything. I'm obsessed. I mean, I think that
now, you know, I say paint pictures, LJ. Everyone's imagining you sniffing around everyone else's bums, and that is not the image you should be putting out there, because that's what animals do.
Yes, it does make travelling on the underground a little bit taxing. But no, in all seriousness, I do. I mean, we smell our food before we eat it. And that's actually part of the reason that if food smells bad and people have lost their sense of smell and they eat it and they get ill, there's also, I think, there was a spate of one-star reviews for scented candles that was being used to track COVID cases because your loss of smell was one of the symptoms earlier on. And you'd be able to see these people giving one-star reviews to scented candles saying, oh, this isn't working for me at all. And I think that when you're encouraged to smell things, that's a sentence I never thought I'd be saying. I mean, having a child, you do end up saying really strange things like don't lick the dishwasher, but encouraging people to smell things is definitely something that we do when we look at, I don't know, particular drinks or food. People are encouraged to enhance their experience with smell. I think for me, perhaps because I don't have the same filter that some people do, it means, going back to what you were saying, if it's a blessing or a curse, the blessing is I can hear music in those birds that are shouting louder and louder. I can hear these beautiful green and yellow sounds that the birds make. You know, but somebody else might not hear that as much, but they're not going to go, oh, this lamp isn't in the right key. It's buzzing in a sort of flat version of A flat and I need to get it out of the house and buy a different light.
Are there any? In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote within seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback with a 4.9 out of 5 star rating on Trustpilot based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ethos.com. Application times and rates may vary.
Are there any downsides to your condition? I'm not sure that's the right.
It sounds like
synesthesia.
I don't know, maybe it's a state of mind. I'm trying to work out a better way to look at it, but yes, of course there are downsides. It means that I am quite a picky eater. I have a problem with onion because the taste is in one key and the texture is in another key. So fennel is fine. That has a texture of onion, but a different taste. Onion, I like the taste of. I can't bear the texture of. Baked beans, for example, no. They are horrific things.
What key's onion in?
Onion is kind of like a... it's quite bright. It's bright and it's high frequency, but the texture is kind of down here. So I really like... finely kind of when you can't crunch the onion. So I'm a massive fan of Indian food, for example, which uses a lot of onion, but it's also cooked out. And just while we're on that subject, I want to recommend a book to you in case you haven't already read it called Masala Lab, The Science of Indian Cooking.
Right.
This is for people who don't like chemically made truffle oil chips. The author Krish Ashok goes into why molecular pairings of different spicing works, and it's just a complete science nerd guide to cooking, which I absorbed during lockdown with great enthusiasm, because again, for me, aroma means that I'm very much interested in how food is put together.
Yeah,
going to a restaurant and spending time kind of picking apart what the chef has decided to do. But the downside is, if I don't like something, I can't eat it. If I don't like the smell of something, I will just go. I can be overwhelmed in areas where there's particularly bright lighting, for example. But I think that that's something that many people would have. They might not be able to say, oh, that lighting is particularly bright, which is why I don't feel comfortable in the shop. But they might just feel a bit weird and not feel as relaxed somewhere. I just happen to be able to go, this is wrong. Or acoustically, you're in a room which looks like it's really small, but it's really echoey. So it's acoustically not consistent.
I've had this discussion with so many people. There's so many pubs out there you go to, especially pubs, some restaurants as well, where they've got so too many bright white lights, not yellow, white lights on. Mm-hmm. And it just makes the pub, it loses its appeal and doesn't make it as nice a place to environment to be in. And then there's there's playlists. If you're spending a lot of money on a meal, you don't mm-hmm. want to hear, I don't know, you don't want to hear Taylor Swift and One Direction. Nothing wrong with Taylor Swift and One Direction, but when you're sitting down for a meal, you want some sort of beautiful music to come over you, if there's going to be music at all. But that's what you want. And then, you know, there's no secret to sitting in somewhere and someone gets onto a piano, like there's a restaurant or something, and someone starts sitting down, or you get someone sitting in a double bass and stuff. Yeah. And suddenly the food, yeah, yes. Exactly. And suddenly the food's like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. I'll have some expensive wine as well then. You know, it's like...
But, have a soup song.
Yeah, that's what it makes you feel like, doesn't it? It's kind of that interesting, you know, it's there's no secret to this stuff, is it? I wonder if our brains or our senses, sorry, are like a mixing dish, you know, you've got your smell and your taste and stuff like that, and you're always adjusting them. Some people don't know, my nan didn't have any smell. I know a lot of people who are suffering from post-COVID symptoms don't have smell, and it must be horrific for them not to be able to have taste and smell. And I wonder if yours are just pushed up far on a few of them, and like your mixing dish is like crunched all the way to the top. I wonder if that's what I'm saying. So you're very, like my smell's right up to the top, sadly, and yours is like crunched right up to the top on these things, and it's making you see the world in a very different way.
It's a great analogy, and I think it's accurate, actually. I do feel like my senses are kind of crunched all the way to the top. And your insight about wanting to have the soundscape around your meal curated as much as the food on the plate,
yes,
makes perfect sense. I love this idea. Why not think more about the experience that you're going to have, instead of it just being this sort of functional thing? And, you know, we live every day, and the experiences that we can pull from our day can be greater than you think. When you're in a mood where food is just fuel and you're just trying to get through to the next day, it's very hard to kind of appreciate certain aspects of being a person. And one of the things I was told when I was going through some of the depression that I experienced was the simple act of narrating to myself doing each thing. So I am doing this. I am taking a bite of this biscuit. I am chewing this biscuit. I can smell the in the back of my throat that kind of lovely, crunchy sort of feeling. And just reducing my point of focus down into a single moment was, I found, quite a restorative for me, an experience where I could go into that experience with not having to think about all of the things that were kind of soul-crushingly difficult at the time. So perhaps there is something in learning how to sit with an experience and call upon all of your senses. So the chaos of a forest, it's not really chaos, but it is, because there's no order to a forest, but there's lots of greens. It's not like you've got this kind of surprise bright colored thing that's jagged and out of place, but a forest is beautiful chaos. The different shapes of the leaves, the way that they are swaying, the sound under your feet, the smell of the mud and the water as you walk through, all of those things, and just thinking about those points in the present was something that really helped me. And I'm just kind of putting that out there in case it might help one other person.
I love what you're saying here. My friend Dave, who went to live in the woods once, there's a podcast with him, Dave Erasmus, if you want to listen to it back. If you're listening to this and you want to listen to it, it's back an earlier episode. He got me to sit in the woods on my own for long period of time, an hour or so, and it's just amazing when you sit there and you just, he said, don't do anything, just sit and look. I got really into meditation as well, and I still am. And one of the great meditations, like, people get misunderstand meditation. They think it's all about clearing your mind. Couldn't not be further from what you're supposed to be doing with meditation. What you're supposed to be doing meditation is observing your mind. And one form of meditation that you can do is an eating meditation, where you eat food but you ponder on it and spend a lot, which is what you're saying, spend a long time chewing it, eating it, tasting it, and just watching the sort of mini fireworks going off in your brain as you enjoy what you're eating, or not if you don't, but you know, it's trying to watch that. What's it like when you're meditating? Can you do your, is your brain just lots of visuals and colors and things? Do you meditate?
I do use mindfulness. I use a lot of mindfulness wherever I can at night. Sometimes my brain doesn't stop on its own. I do need to kind of help it. I mean, I talk about creativity and resilience, and I give these talks and training to people and like companies about getting unstuck. I try and inspire people using like technology and music, and my brain just goes brrr, like this. And to turn off and to stop and to just be receptive is really hard for somebody where my brain's just going, look at this thing, listen to this thing, think about this thing. Oh, this would be interesting. And so how do you do it? Well, I've found things like progressive muscular relaxation, where you start on like your foot and you imagine that relaxing, and then you work your way up. And then things like yoga nidra, where it's the kind of you're lying still and you're concentrating on relaxing. That's quite fun. And, you know, sometimes I manage it, sometimes I don't. I would say that playing the piano is a shortcut to that sense of emptying your mind. So when I'm playing, I just go into this mode of completely tranquil and full and empty at the same time. So much so that I did a piece for BBC Click, the show I work on, and one of the things was you wear a brain cap and you stare at different patterns on a screen. I promise this is relevant. That you stare at different patterns on a screen, and depending on which pattern you stare at, your visual cortex gives off an electrical signal that then triggers a cello player to play one of four different pieces of music. So four different phrases of music. This is Professor Eduardo Miranda, University of Plymouth, an exceptionally interesting human. And they had to recalibrate the whole system, because every time the cellist played on the cello, my brain gave out a completely, like, all the noise on my brain just disappeared. And they had to recalibrate it because my brain was behaving really oddly when the music was being played.
That's interesting.
So I think there's definitely a...
I wonder if we're going too far too quickly as humans. I'd like to talk to you about Click, but just very quickly, Back in Time is a TV show on BBC. Sarah Cox does it. They did The Corner Shop as the recent series, and they did 8 episodes from the... I think they started in the late 1800s or something. And the first corner shop they did, the guys were sitting there, and the women were coming in to buy their shopping, and the corner shop guys would have to serve them. That's how it used to work. And the two women were sitting there. The one bit of the whole thing I remember is they were sitting there going, we've been sitting here half an hour and you're still not finished. And then one of them went, it's relaxing, isn't it? I thought that, because now they've moved all the way through until self-service, you know, now they've got that in the last episode, we've now got the ability, as we know, to walk around supermarkets and actually not talk to another human, because we can pay it all and walk out without actually having to do anything. And that's the corner shop, technology is going to the corner shop too. So I think we're going very fast, but I do love the future. I love technology. You know, your job is involved in that. Do you get very excited about looking at the future of technology?
I mean, where I'm really, really interested is it's almost beyond technology. I see technology as a lever almost. It's a way of connecting people with people. All technology is about making the human experience better in a way. At least that's the vision for it. Whether or not the person making the vision has humanity's best interests at heart is another matter. But at its heart, I think that technology creates a way for humans to do things differently. So everything from just calling somebody via video means that instead of me having to try and find a way to get to you and drive or get the train all the way to where you are, we can have this amazing conversation in very low latency without needing to kind of do the old, like Bach, he walked for 6 weeks to go and hear somebody play. 6 weeks. And now you can just click on YouTube and hear pretty much any song you want. And there's so much technology out there that, I mean, what I like to do is I play with it. I sometimes feel that where I am, I talk about it a lot, but I really prefer playing with it, like using AI to create the Beatles singing Call Me Maybe using artificial intelligence. You can do these really wild musical things. Like, I feel like with immersive art and immersive theatrical technology, where you can kind of put somebody in a room and make them think that they're walking through a forest, but actually it's just four projectors that just fooling your mind into thinking that you're somewhere. And theme parks, for example, I find those sorts of technologies where it changes the human experience really interesting. So social media, how has that changed the world that we live in? Some of it is concerning. And yet it keeps evolving. We as humans need to try and take some responsibility for the direction of technology as best we can, because technology is going to progress whether we're involved in its progression or not, almost. So I guess thanks for coming to my TED talk.
I must tell you back to theme parks though, because I just think they're just the most heinous places. They're just all you do is bloody queue. And the last time I went to one, which, because I refuse to go to them now, I just think queuing for like 45 minutes for a 3 minute ride or a 2 minute ride, you know, the maths don't work. The economics of fun does not add up for me. And so I took my daughters there, and I got twins when they were younger, and I got one of these fast track things, but it was a press thing because they wanted me to talk about it, obviously, for social media. So I went to the front of every queue, and I really despise that even more, because my kids went, it's amazing. I thought, no, not for the other 95% of people, or 98% of people in here have to queue for 45 minutes for every bloody, you went to the front, you're spoiled. And this is, and I would never do it again, because I just think they should have the proper experience, which is horrific in my mind. But I do think people are told that it's fun. There's lots of colors, there's lots of screaming, there's lots of noises, there's lots of sugar to buy, to eat and drink. And I think people are told it's fun, so they walk in there and they go, I'm having fun. And I just think, if you actually sat down and went, no, you're just not, are you? You're queuing, that's what you're doing. You're standing in a queue, everyone's miserable because they're stood in a bloody queue. I'm just not a fan of queuing.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you about the queuing. I mean, I do think there's a real opportunity to transform the experience of theme parks. And I'm not saying I love the queuing. I like the 3 minutes on the ride going really fast and being thrown around in all different directions.
Yeah, that is amazing.
That's the bit I mean. Yeah. I don't like the questionable selection of food, the queuing, the kind of feeling like you're doing nothing for a long time and then you have this kind of short burst of activity.
Yeah.
But like, leaving that aside, the experience of going on a roller coaster for me is completely sublime, because with all of my settings up to 11 anyway, it's like this sort of bright light and incredibly large orchestra. And that for me is probably almost worth the waiting around for a long time on the ground.
LJ, we've come to the end of an hour now, sadly. I'll tell you what, though, you've really inspired me to try and work on my senses a bit more, make sure I'm getting the most out of them, making sure I'm, every time I eat or every time I do anything, that I'm trying to get the most experience out of it. Because I do think we've sort of dulled our experiences quite a lot. You know, we just get all our adrenaline from watching Netflix, the next drama on Netflix or something. And I think maybe we need to go out and experience the sounds and the sights and the smells. Well, not in my case, not the smells, but
not
a bit
so much
more
of the smells.
What have you got coming up next? What are you going to be doing? Anything we should be looking out for?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm really enjoying doing my sort of talks and doing my little training courses for people on like presenting more and getting people unstuck. So, you know, little things that I learned when I was learning music, like turning the sheet music upside down and trying to play it, makes it a lot easier when you turn it the right way up again. And I really enjoy...
You did what? You used to turn it upside down and play upside down?
Oh, yes. If you've got a really hard piece of music, one of my teachers at the Royal College of Music said to me, well, just turn it upside down and try playing that. And that was so impossible and so difficult that by the time you turned it the right way back it was a lot easier.
That's brilliant. Oh, listen,
being able to unstick people.
Where should people, if they want to follow you or contact you, where should they go? What's the best place to get to you?
Oh, I'm on Instagram at ThisIsLJRich, and I'm on Twitter, just LJRich there. And I'm on Twitch as well, LJ Tunes on Twitch, where I occasionally play music and talk about things and solve the Rubik's Cube.
Perfect. Thank you so
much. Just sort of general evening of madness.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. Cheers, LJ. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.